Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's a good song, and it was well put over today. That's excellent work. And it talks about the themes that we often talk about at Unity, the idea that we can let these things go. We don't have to be overwhelmed with the baggage of the past. And I want to talk about this in relation to Heartwood, because a couple of months ago I had a man on my show named Mark Nepo, and he came through a very devastating form of cancer, came out the other side, changed his life, since become a writer and an inspirer. And he wrote the little book of Awakening, which is a sort of a guide through the year. He also wrote a book of poems, and he came on my radio show, and we talked about some of his latest poems, one of which was Heartwood. Now, I'll read it in a minute, but I started musing about heartwood. You know, the heartwood of a tree is the wood right in the center of the tree, right? You've got the bark and you've got the outer layers, but at the heart of it is the heartwood, which is non-living, and yet it sustains the tree. The tree would fall down without the heartwood. Interesting. In other words, it's a kind of a metaphor for all kinds of interesting ideas. The seeming non-living things, the seeming things that maybe we've rejected, you know, or ignored, are actually the things that sustain us, that give us the ability to carry on. So I came up with sort of interesting metaphors for this idea, and I've got seven of them. Maybe there's more, but interesting, this idea that the seeming valueless. And by the way, another thing about heartwood is it's the best wood, right? That's the wood that you want when you're building something. It's the heartwood. So the first thing is what seems useless isn't. That is good news, folks, for all of us. None of us, therefore, are useless. Right? Because sometimes we think, I'm useless, I'm not contributing to anything. The message I'm getting from Heartwood, the seeming non-living parts that sustain the larger growth of the tree, everything is useful, so I'm not useless. Number two, what seems non-living supports life, right? We tend to divide things into animate and inanimate, don't we? But really, there is nothing that's inanimate, you know? I think it's just slow. For instance, you know, we tend to think move fast. A rock takes a longer time. But it's still doing its rock thing, you know. It's just a little slow. Maybe it's not slow. We're too quick. You know, a rock can take it easy in a way that we can't, you know. So we got lots of things to learn from the non-living. That's the second thing. The third one is the past seems dead, right? But it is actually alive in us. And sometimes we sort of dispose of our past. I wish I could get rid of it. You know, if I could get rid of all the nasty bits of my past, I'd be happy, yeah? All that baggage, those nasty fears and hurts. In fact, those nasty hurts and fears and all the things that you're trying to avoid are actually sustaining you. They're what making you, you, right? And so rather than see them as a problem, we want to bring them up. We want to embrace them. They're part of our heartwood. Number four, light exists in the dark. And I love this idea that out of the darkness comes forth light. Yeah? That this is the power of light. The light doesn't make sense unless it shines in something, and it shines in the dark. So rather than see dark as a problem, it's actually the gift that is given to light, to let light be what it is. So the next time you're in a dark place, know this is an ideal place for light to shine. Yeah, it is beautiful. So it's counterintuitive again. It's the dead, seeming dead heartwood that gives forth to light. Five. Something comes out of nothing. See, God creates like this. God didn't have sort of building blocks or Lego pieces and made the universe, right? God created it all out of nothing, the void, emptiness, right? So out of nothing comes something. This is amazing, isn't it? Because it's not like God was given a bunch of stuff and sort of manipulated it and, ooh, cool, I'll make this. No, there was nothing there, and all of a sudden there was. If we are made in the image and likeness of God, it suggests that we too can create something out of nothing, out of the void. In fact, that's a very creative place to be. It's not taking what we already got and sort of shifting around, rearranging the furniture on the Titanic. We get to create a whole new Titanic. Well, maybe not a Titanic, but we get to create a whole new boat of life, ship of life, yeah, through the nothingness. In fact, to me, all creativity comes out of this seeming void, this emptiness, this nothingness. What number was that? That was 5. Number 6. Therefore, if that's true, nothing is wasted or inessential, right? If God could create out of nothing, then nothing is good. In other words, everything is good. In the conundrum of God's universe, nothing is inessential or wasted. So nothing that ever happened to you is actually wasted. It has brought you to where you are today, and this is a beautiful thing, yeah? So we are redeeming our past. We're redeeming our messy bits. We're redeeming the times we wanted to crawl under the carpet, right? Because when I can see myself crawling without judgment on myself, then I can see it as a wonderful life experience. Just don't ask me to do it in public, that's all. And then number 7, the unconscious inner world informs the conscious world or the conscious mind, yeah? You know, it's like the iceberg. What? You got a tenth showing above the water and then 9/10 below. I think it's even more in terms of the subconscious mind, right? The larger part of us is basically subconscious, unconscious. And yes, that's the way God expresses through our subconscious mind, through dreams, through ideas, through inspiration, through intuition. It all comes subconsciously or unconsciously into our consciousness. I can't do it from my conscious mind. I'm not really very creative from there. In fact, if I try to be, I get it wrong. If I start thinking about it too much. But if I allow the intuitive wisdom to flow forth, God coming through my subconscious, then I become exceptionally creative. So again, counterintuitive, isn't it? Out of the heartwood, out of the seeming non-living emptiness, the stuff that I ignore, you know, that was just a dream. I don't think so. It depends how you choose to frame that dream. I got a wonderful gift of the Red Book for Christmas. Is everybody familiar with the Red Book? But Carl Jung, the great psychologist, kept a book for 20 years of his dreams and his unconscious and subconscious discussions with his soul, and wrote it down. It really was it generated all his great ideas, and it's full of amazing pictures. He was a great artist as well. Anyway, he put down all this unconscious stuff, which later led to all the wonderful teachings, the archetypes, the psychological types, the very things that we talk about every day in Unity now, the dark side, the shadow, it's all in Jung. So this book tells me that he went to the heartwood, he went to the scary bits, the frightening bits to find his inspiration. Yeah, you may be hearing more about the Red Book since I got it for Christmas and I'll be reading it. But let's read this poem called Heartwood, and see what you think. Because I think death is another form of heartwood, you know? We see death as the end, but it isn't. It's just another part of living, the continuity of living. So Mark Nepo's Heartwood. My friend has died, and the grass is growing as I watch the logs dry and crack in the garage. Yesterday, I saw a lone worm leave the heartwood as if waiting till it was safe. I wonder what lone secret left Steve's heart after he died before the medics arrived. Is it hiding in his closet or in our grief? Is this the relentless, resilient way that what survives moves from one carrier to the next? There are buds on the maple, though it is October. Even the wet concrete seems beautiful. If I knew the question, I'd ask it of everyone. Now, I think he's being a bit coy at the end there because I think he already knows the question. So I'm going to read the poem once again, and then I'm going to ask you, what's the question? What's the question that it's helpful to ask ourselves here in terms of following our path home to the heartwood of who we are, right? So let me read it again. He says, my friend has died and the grass is growing as I watch the logs dry and crack in the garage. Yesterday, I saw a lone worm leave the heartwood as if waiting till it was safe. I wonder what lone secret left Steve's heart after he died before the medics arrived. Is it hiding in his closet or in our grief? Is this the relentless, resilient way that what survives moves from one carrier to the next? There are buds on the maple, though it is October. Even wet concrete seems beautiful. If I knew the question, I'd ask it of everyone. All right, what's the question? And there's no right answer, by the way, so don't worry about getting it wrong, because it's up to us. Okay, yeah, exactly. And we are in unity, and this is the church of herding cats, so that's a perfect answer. We're all uniquely different, so everybody's got their own question. So yes, thank you. But so that the sermon can move forward now and not reach a terrible roadblock, we're going to answer that question. What is the question that we might have? Well, for me, it's, you know, are you open? Am I open? Am I open to receiving information from even the most unlikely of places? See, that's what the metaphor does for me. Am I paying attention to everything that might be happening in my life, regardless of whether it's good or bad? Because, see, what tends to happen is if it's bad, I tend to judge it and dismiss it. Then I've missed the golden opportunity, right, of receiving some blessing through that thing. If I could stay just open and receptive to it, then I get to see it in a way that I couldn't if I make a judgment about it. Yeah? You want to say something? Yeah, if you like, I see the silver lining, that there's always a, you know, that's a cliche, isn't it? And we tend to dismiss it. Oh, I don't want to go there. They're always trying to make me look on the bright side of things, you know? And I resist that. I resist being told to look on the bright side, you know? Always look on the bright side of life. Yeah, thank you. I want to tell a story on myself because when I went to India this last time with Wendy, and it was my third time in India, my fourth time in that part of the world, and the first thing that Wendy said when we landed, she says, India is such a big deal for you. Why is that? And immediately I start to bristle and get as defensive, you know, about it. And she said it in a loving way. It wasn't a challenge, but it was. It was a challenge. She was trying to get me to really look at what my feelings towards India were. And you know, I've shared before that I've characterized my life as BI and AI, before India and after India. And her question opened up a whole thing for me, you know, was why have I made it so important? Why have I codified my life in such a way? And why is my story that, you know, oh, I went to India and everything changed? You know, I know that was true to a degree, but if you live that story, you tend not to be open anymore to new information. And so it was wondrous to have that question asked of me, because then I was able to look at India in a new light. Instead of seeing it through the filter of, I've been there before, this is my place, I know it's a wonderful place, etc., I could see it for the first time. Plus, I was seeing it for the first time through her eyes as well. As a result of that, though, as a result of staying open to new information, right, of seeing that there's more than just my story about it, then we began to get information coming subconsciously through weird things. Bowls would show up. And that was my trip. It was the bowl trip, I guess. Because the bowl, we kept coming across bowls in temples, and we bought bowls. And the image was, I'm pouring out the old bowl, the old stuff from the bowl. You know, I'm just letting it go. And I was looking for a healing, actually, because although I'd done a lot of work dealing with the trauma in the church in the last 3 years, there was still some residual hurt. And the bowl idea was perfect. You know, I was pouring out the old, pouring out the sorrow to create more, to create this void so that more could come in. Just like we talked about last week in the sermon, the idea that you release so that you create an open space so that new things can pour in. Man, that was a terrific healing for me. Now we have the bowl at the bottom of our altar in our room, and it's filled with flowers right now because Wendy likes to fill them up with flowers. But that's beautiful. Fill up your bowl with something beautiful, right? With some possibility of living. So I share the story because to me it's an example of how you can be misled by the insights of the past, and it can blind you to what's possible now, right? That there is always new information to come. That's the message of the Heartwood, yeah? To go into the void, into the darkness, into the letting go, to release, like Bono said, you know, so that I can let go of that, to surrender into something much more magnificent. You know, often, what do we do with the past? We try and hide it. What do we do with pain? We try and deny it. What do we do with death? We try and brush it aside. We don't want to dwell on morbid subjects. You know, that's getting depressing and all that. You know, we have labels for it. And so instead of looking at it, we tend to deny it. And we don't live it fully because of that, yeah? We have to look at it. I want to share another personal story. And I've shared it before. If you've heard it before, bear with me. But in 2004, after the death of my first wife, I went for a past life regression thing with a therapist, and because I needed some healing at that time. And I was lying on the table, and the person took me. He said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Well, let's see what comes." And well, what came was the mountain where I grew up, near the Garth Mountain, which is one of my favorite mountains, a lot of memories with my father. My father, by the way, had died 27 years earlier, so he'd been dead more years than I knew him. I knew him for 24 years of my life. And I was up the mountain. We climbed up the mountain in this visualization, and there was a cup or a bowl at the top of the mountain, beautiful grassy bowl, and I lay down in there, and it was no wind. There was wind on the mountain, but in this bowl it was calm. Lay down there, and all of a sudden my father came to me. I didn't see him, but I heard him, and he said, "Son, it's been a long time." And at that moment then I burst into tears. I started the vortex in my heart, and it was amazing. It was totally transformative. It was scary. It was healing. It was everything. And since that time, I felt very close to him. I feel like he is not dead, and that he is simply waiting. He's there. You know, there's that beautiful connection. He's the Heartwood, right? The seeming thing that's gone, but is still there. And I believe that when I pass on, he'll probably be there again. And I think that's true for all of us, you know, that those folks who seem to have passed haven't really passed. What was fascinating to me was his statement. He was a man of few words. And for him to say, "Son, it's been a long time." In other words, he was what? He was waiting for me, yeah? And it doesn't matter how much we put it on hold, this willingness to be open, the good is always waiting. The good is always there. The moment we open to it, there it is. Yeah? This is the joy of this way of living, I think, of being open and receptive. You know, Jesus seemed to die, didn't he? And yet what? He lived. And his message is now life in us, that a million sons and daughters being reborn thanks to his message, right? So his death was immaterial, really, and yet it had to happen. It had to happen to demonstrate the continuity and the glory and the power of life. So we celebrate his death, but even more we celebrate the resurrecting life that came through that death experience. He is now the Heartwood, right, from which I can stand and be strong in my tree of life that I am. We've all lost someone, haven't we, over the years? I mean, I know there's nobody on the planet that hasn't lost someone. I've lost a fair few people myself, and lost my sister, my first wife, as I said, my parents, friends. And I was sitting in my study at home one time and recently, and looking out at the greenery outside, and I started to think about what death is and what the dead are. Wrote this poem, and it's apropos for today's message, so I'm sharing it with you. It's called "The Dead Are Green." And it was literally because I was looking outside and seeing nature. And it says, the dead are green. They have resurrected through the earth into a dense canopy for birds in flight to land and chatter and mate. The dead are a sky of memory welcoming my uplifted head. Dead sister, wife, father, mother, now leaf, blade, and insect. I recognize you in your journeying through being and non-being, dealing with the disasters of lawnmower and axe, stamping feet, inconstant heart. The dead are weeds thrusting through well-tended gardens, prickling my fingers, having the awkward job of being forgotten and yet not letting us forget. The dead are green because all living things are green. And I believe that. That's my theology, I guess, is that, you know, there's nothing that's ever wasted. There's nothing that's ever gone, right? It is all part of the continuity of living. And when we can be open and receptive to that, then we see magnificently. We live remarkable lives. So if we could sum up what we might have heard today, what would it be? Be open, stay open. We all have a unique question, like Jackie said, but you have to find it, yeah? And it starts with being open. It starts with being open to whatever. I'm open. I don't know what to. It doesn't matter. I'm open and receptive, yeah? Because then things begin to show themselves. In the present moment, mysteries are revealed. I love that. If we are open. Yeah. Say it again. Everything is essential and useful, no matter how weirdly shaped it comes. Right? No matter how ugly it seems to be. So I choose a life of possibility, yeah? In Jesus' death, I see life. In the most unpromising of circumstances, I see something larger, something more wonderful. I see the heartwood within even the most difficult of circumstances, diseases, hurts. In the pain, I see redemption and joy, right? In the failures, I see room for compassion and forgiveness for myself and others. And as Bono said, I'm wide awake. I am not sleeping. Amen.
Thank you for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at www.unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We thank you for your contribution and affirm with you. Divine love flowing through us blesses and multiplies all that we give and all that we receive.